Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 237, and we're going to talk a little bit about Bob Wells and the lesson we can learn from his van life journey that applies to our van life journey. We're also going to talk about LED lights and what I consider a big myth about them. We'll have a product review of some LED lights and a place to visit that was both very modern and very old at the same time. Thank you for joining me here once again. I'm thrilled to be back with you. We're going to have a relatively normal episode this week, which will be nice for a change. But first, I have to talk about Van Fest a little bit. February 6th through February 9th in Melbourne, Florida at Space Coast Daily Park. VanFest will be happening, and they're estimating over 300 rigs for a weekend of camping and workshops and van tours and vendors and food trucks. And anyway, it's a really good time. I went last year. I'm going again this year. I'll be giving two talks, and this is a very affordable event. You can stay on site, or you can just come for the day. Everything you need to know is at VanFestUSA.com. I encourage you all to join us for one of the very rare East Coast van life events. We have to get these things coming. And no, I'm not sponsored. I'm just speaking there, and I want more people to come. I want to meet you, so thank you. Now, on to the topic here. Mr. Bob Wells. That name is probably familiar to you. If it's not, know that he is the rather Santa Claus-looking gentleman in the movie Nomadland, which was based on the book Nomadland, which was a nonfiction book, which featured him prominently because it is fair to say he is the godfather of modern van life. His YouTube channel, Cheap RV Living, and his van life meetup, Rubber Tramp Rendezvous, which is in Quartzsite every year in the winter, in like January, is huge. I cannot overestimate the impact this guy has had. But it seems to be an interesting fractured impact. If you are my age and you are doing any kind of van life, you probably know who Bob Wells is. But if you're 20-something and you're just getting into van life, maybe you just got out of school and you want to bum around a bit or whatever, you may not have encountered Bob Wells because he's an older guy and he focuses basically on people who are retired and don't have a lot of money and either are struggling to get by or want to live a very frugal, intentional life in a vehicle. And you can see there's a bit of disconnect there. If you're a 20-something who's going to go climb all the rocks they can, Bob Wells has a lot of advice and tips and tricks for you, but it might be a different vibe. He's a very big deal, and by all accounts, he's a very nice guy. And he has influenced me. When I started van life, before I had a van, I watched his channel a lot, and he gave me encouragement that this isn't that hard. He basically addresses every problem there is and comes up with a reasonable, affordable way for you to overcome that challenge. So let me just start by saying I highly recommend you visit Cheap RV Living, the YouTube channel. I'll have a link in the show notes, and watch a bunch of his videos. Sometimes he waxes philosophic. A lot of times he tours other people's vans. And sometimes he'll just show, hey, here's 16 different refrigerators, and here's the one I found works the best. Now, he does come under some criticism because he's actually so popular that he's making real money from YouTube and stuff like that. So he is no longer needing to live in a vehicle like he does. He is choosing to. And from what I can see, he funnels a whole lot of his money into his nonprofit, which is the Homes on Wheels Alliance, which I donate to every month. This is an organization that really helps people live in vehicles. And I think this is something we should definitely consider going forward as we're entering these new days. And I'll have a link to them in the show notes, too. I also recommend you take a look and consider donating. But that's actually not what I want to talk about. I just wanted to introduce Bob Wells to you. He is a big deal. I've never met Bob Wells. I don't have any plans to meet him, just to be clear. But he's met a whole lot of van life people. You can basically pick a van life figure, somebody who's well known, and then search their name and Bob Wells, and you could probably find some sort of an interview between them. I mean, Wonder Hussey, Foresty Forest, there's a long list. And the only reason I haven't gone to Rubber Tramp Rendezvous is that it's so far away. Quartzsite is a huge drive from Chicago, and I have been afraid to put that many miles on my van. Also, it takes a lot of time, which I haven't had lately because of all the driving. So, anyway, that is a very long preamble. The point I want to talk about is Bob Wells, is his van life journey, because he's made a big change recently, and I think it's very interesting. So, let's talk a bit about his journey. Now, I said I don't know the guy, and I may be saying some things wrong here, but this is what I've picked up over the years watching him. He's from Alaska. At some point, he found himself in a situation where he had no place to live, and he moved into a box truck. And he lived in that box truck for years in Alaska. Winter, summer, didn't matter. And that experience taught him all kinds of ways to survive in a vehicle. Then later on, he moved into a van. I believe it was a Chevy Express, just a regular cargo van. And he lived in that for years. Frugally, this is not a guy who builds out these beautiful rigs. They are all about practicality. And then he put a high top on that and thought it was great. And then he ended up getting another Chevy Express. And I remember him saying specifically, this is the last van I'm ever going to own. I think he's in his early 60s, if I'm not mistaken. And he's thinking this van's going to last me 20 years. And I don't know if I'll be able to do van life in my 80s. So that's what he was thinking. But then he got another one. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. He got another Chevy van. And I was like, okay, well, you know, he must have come into some money, and he had from his YouTube channel, and he wanted a nicer van. And I'm like, okay, that makes total sense. And he built that out. And then maybe a year or two later, he bought an ambulance. And I was like, huh, okay, he's going up. He got a bigger vehicle. Now, he got a Type 3 ambulance, which is a van front and a big box in back, which is arguably the kind you should get, not what I did. That's a whole long story. But me, being inspired by him, watching him mess around with his ambulance, I was like, wow, I want to do that. And this was in 2020. And so I started hunting for an ambulance to replace my NV200, which had 159,000 miles on it. And even though I wasn't having any real problems with it, I was concerned that I was going to use up its remaining life quickly, so I decided to look for another vehicle, and I ended up getting an ambulance, a 2011 Mercedes Sprinter 2500 ambulance. That has been a legendary fiasco. I love the vehicle. It is absolutely not what you should get. Do not buy a van ambulance. It doesn't make any sense. You should just buy a van. Ambulances are hard to work on. You don't need that hassle. Also, don't buy a Mercedes Sprinter or diesel or an ambulance. All those things. Don't do what I did. Yes, I love my van, but still. Okay. I blame Bob Wells for all that. No, of course, I don't blame him. But he inspired me because I saw what he was doing. And here's this van life guru guy who's gone through this big thing. And this is his chosen vehicle. He thinks this is the best vehicle for him. I thought, well, I should follow suit. So he started tricking out his ambulance, he painted it, he put stuff inside, he decided he didn't like looking at the cabinets, which he mostly left inside, so he put up a big mural of, like, mountains, and then when he was in the van, he saw the mountains and said, you know, I didn't do that, but he did that, I get it, it's cool. He's the kind of guy that doesn't live so much in his van as out of it, you know, he'll go and park somewhere for a long time. And then he bought some desert land that he can park on year-round, he doesn't have to worry about anyone giving him the knock. Which is also something I did. And I'm like, okay, you know, I might as well just keep going here. And here's what he did recently that I thought was so interesting. He bought a Subaru Forester. He bought, I think, a brand new Subaru Forester. And if it's not new, it's really new. I mean, I think it's a 2024. And that's what he's going to live in now. He's building out, actually, he's already built it out, a Subaru Forester. Now, if you're not familiar with Subarus, this is not a big car. In fact, it's one of the smallest cars Subaru makes. And that's what he's going to live in. He's going from an ambulance, one of the largest vans you can live in, if you want to think of it like that, to a fairly small vehicle. Now, he's done some very creative things in his build, and I'll have a link in the show notes to his build, too. He basically made it a double-decker, and that's not to say he put a living area on the roof. He does have stuff on the roof to store stuff, but what he did was the inside has two levels. He sleeps in the lower level, and then when he sits up, he's got like a big table or desk or whatever he needs. I've never seen anything quite like it. It's worth looking at. But the point is, this guy, the most van life guy of van life guys, if you're in my generation, doesn't have a van. Or he might still have one, but that's not what he's living in anymore. He's gone to a Subaru, which is almost exactly the opposite of his ambulance. And why? Why did he do that? And there's something I've noticed in van life, and it certainly happened to me, is, and this is an old adage, you covet what you don't have. When we're in our vans, at least, and I'll speak for myself here, but I think this applies to a whole lot of people, we're constantly thinking of fixing things. Like, what could I do to make this better? Because we went through that process the entire time of building out our van. Now, if you bought your van all built out, you might see things a little differently. But for those of us who built our vans, the entire process, we're thinking, what can I do to make things better? And that doesn't stop when you're done. So let's say you did what I did, right? You got an ambulance and you got in there and you're like, wow, this is really strong and built and look at all this space. And I think I'll remove this and put the beds there. And then the problems start when you realize removing this is incredibly difficult. And then you're constantly like, oh, everything's so hard. And if these cabinets weren't here, I could just move this over here. It would make so much more sense. And then you're like, maybe I should rip this all out. But then that doesn't make sense. I'm not a carpenter. I can't ever build anything this good. And if I'm going to rip it out, why did I buy the ambulance in the first place? I should have just bought an empty van, which you should have. And then finally, you start realizing that you want what your vehicle can't give you. Man, I wish this thing was more nimble. I wish I could go through drive-thrus. I wish I could fit in parking spaces. I wish it wasn't so obvious. I'd like to have some more stealth. I wish I could drive it on any road I wanted and not worry. I wish tolls were less because the vehicle is just a car. It's not tall. It doesn't have the new tolls. I wish it got much better gas mileage. And you know, I wish I could take it off-road more. I mean, it's a fairly tall vehicle, but I really wish I could just go anywhere that, oh, a Subaru can go. Oh, wait, a Subaru can do all these things that I can't do in my van. I want a Subaru. Which I don't, but you see what I'm getting at here. And my prediction is that after he spends enough time in his Subaru, he's going to be like, oh my God, I just want to be able to stand up. I mean, have you ever tried to pee in a vehicle? Even with a bottle, it's not the easiest thing in the world. And oh, everything is so cramped in here. I just need some more space. And he's going to start about getting a bigger vehicle. And then maybe he'll buy a Suburban or something like that that's in between. And who knows? He may end up back in a van again. I don't know. Now, I am not faulting Bob in any way for this. I'm just illustrating a point here that we van life people are constantly evolving. We want it all. We want the van that'll get the best gas mileage, that has the best off-road ability, that fits in any space, that's tiny, tiny, tiny on the outside and absolutely enormous on the big side. And TARDISes don't exist. We can't have what we want. Unless you do an idiotic thing like I'm doing and start having a fleet, which I'm hoping to get rid of. I don't want a fleet of vehicles. Somehow I've ended up with one. So one of my projects for next year is to start whittling down all these things that have wheels. Anyway, that's it. That was my point. That's all there is to it. Don't feel guilty about coveting somebody else's rig or coveting your future rig. Just remember that there's a reason you picked the rig you did. And if you leave that rig, you're very likely going to miss those things. I certainly miss a whole lot about my NV200. And if and when I sell my ambulance, I'm completely going to miss aspects of that. So sometimes you just have to say, yeah, I'm actually right where I want to be at this moment. And be happy with that. Thanks to everyone for the support I've received. I really appreciate it, and you guys keep me going on this podcast. And we have no ads, and we're not going to have any ads for quite a while now. So thank you to everyone who has gone to buymeacoffee.com/builttogo and bought me some diesel. You folks, especially the ones that contribute every month, are the reason we do not have ads on this podcast, nor on YouTube. There's no ads on YouTube either, if that's where you prefer to listen to the podcast, because that's all that's there is the audio. So thank you. Van Life News. So, Hiker, one of my most common chat buddies in Discord, sent me a link to an article about these folks who almost died when their RV exploded because somebody lit a cigarette or a cigar. The articles disagree on what was lit. Doesn't matter. What matters is kaboom. This thing exploded. It was ugly. The woman is still in intensive care. She's got burns all over her body. It is not a good thing. And I thought, okay, I'll mention that. I mean, it's a fairly common thing, but I'm going to mention it because it's so important. And then I went to Google. And I didn't have the link to the article because I'm lazy, and I just typed in RV propane explosion. And I found so many articles addressing so many different incidents that I'm not going to link to that one specific one. I'm just linking to the search. Go ahead and go to the show notes and click on RVs continue to explode. And you will see basically every month someone blows themselves up because they have a propane leak and they light a cigarette or something similar. So this is really important for you DIY folks. Now, this doesn't only happen for DIY. This happens for custom-built ones too, but propane can be completely safe to use. I've used it for years and years without any incident, but you can't mess around. You have to install it correctly, and I highly, 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 highly recommend that if you have propane in your van, you install it in a properly built propane locker that has a drain in the floor that's 1 inch in diameter, so that if the propane leaks in there, it will leak under the van. Propane, LPG, as it's properly called in the U.S., is heavier than air. If something leaks, it will go down that drain, and you will hopefully smell it and realize there's a problem. Now, those of you reading this might just say, holy cow, why would anybody have propane in their van? And I'd be like, yeah, I get it. It's crazy dangerous. Why do you have it? Well, because the other option is having a whole lot of electric, which also has its dangers, and I have both. I like the flexibility of having both. But if you say you're afraid of gas, I totally get it. So go ahead and have a look and see how many people have blown themselves up with propane. And, you know, if you want to look, you can see how many electrical fires there were and how many gasoline fires there were, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're doing risky stuff here. Don't shy away from that. Just embrace it and meet those risks. When I was in... Where the heck was... Oh, when I was in Vienna, Austria, on this crazy tour I just did, I took some pictures of vans, and everyone's looking at me like, why is he taking pictures of vans? And they didn't understand, but you understand. And one of the vans I took a picture of was a Volkswagen California. This is the new electric camper van, factory built by Volkswagen. And there was one on the street, and I got to see it. Now, the owner wasn't there. I didn't get to tour it or anything. I just got to see it. And it's beautiful. It's an amazing vehicle. I would love to see how it works. And, yeah, it's called the California because that's where you can't get one. In fact, you can't get them in the U.S. at all. Volkswagen Californias will not be introduced to the U.S. because, quote-unquote, we cannot have nice things. However, we can have the Volkswagen ID Buzz. That is capital I, capital D, period, capital B, U-Z-Z. ID Buzz, a lovely name. This is Volkswagen's current answer to the Volkswagen bus. You know, the hippie bus, the symbolic vehicle of van life, if you don't have a Sprinter. Yes, that. And they're here. They're out. You can get one right now. And they're real. So what these things are is they're electric rear-wheel drive Volkswagen vans that can go over 200 miles on a charge. You absolutely could turn one of these into a camper van. There's a couple of problems, though. Well, it's actually three different problems I can think of. The first off is that they're in huge demand. It's going to be very difficult to find one. The second is, and I kid you not, The list price base model starting price is $62,000. That's a little different than the Volkswagen bus, which was a very affordable vehicle. This is not a very affordable vehicle. And that is for rear-wheel drive. If you want to go up to all-wheel drive, it is significantly more expensive. And that is basically just a minivan. That's all it is. The interior is a minivan. That's it. That's what it is. The entire dashboard is a digital screen like a Tesla. It's very minimal. It's very colorful and pretty. You know, it's got some nice Volkswagen styling to it. And it has good range. But, well, I can't imagine anyone turning into a camper van now unless they're actually very wealthy and doing this as a project. It doesn't seem like a practical vehicle to do that with to me, because it's worth so much money that you wouldn't want to tear the seats out or anything, and you'd almost have to tear the seats out to turn it into an actual camper van. But they're pretty. Anyway, you can take a look at the article that Motorweek has. It's linked in the show notes. And, yeah, the name of the article is 2025 Volkswagen ID. Buzz starts at $61,545, and I think that is actually the headline. And I just found this thing. This isn't actually new news. This was back in February or January. This company that I had never heard of called Tusca. Tusca sounds like it's Italian or something, or maybe something from Star Wars. I don't know where they got the name from. But they are building these instant homes, basically. So let me back up here. This company is mostly interested in hunting products, and they build hunting blinds. But somebody at the company had the great idea saying, what's the difference between a hunting blind and a camper? And they reconfigured their hunting blinds to be these units that are almost wedge-shaped that can fit on a flatbed trailer. I mean, I'm talking a really cheap utility trailer here. Or in the back of almost any pickup truck. They come in a couple different sizes. They do fit in the short bed pickup trucks. And they're only 190 pounds. And it's basically made out of a foam that's been treated so it's strong. It's covered in basically Rhino liner, you know, that tough coating that they put on truck beds. It has a couple of windows, a couple of vents, and a door. And the inside's all finished. And you can crawl in there and you can just throw a sleeping bag on the floor and sleep on it like that. Or you can build it out. It's a nice, great way to start. I'm really impressed with these, especially the 190 pounds, because that means that two people could lift this thing up and move it. There's no jacks or anything like that. It's just kind of a box with the front wedge. And yeah, they're a hunting company. That's what they were thinking of. But when I'm looking at this, I see blank slate build out camper van. You could easily do a no build in this thing, or you could do actually a whole build out, and you could move it from vehicle to vehicle. So the situation I'm in right now is this spring I'm going to build out my Ram 1500 Classic into some kind of a camping vehicle. I bought a topper, kind of a higher cap for the back off of Facebook Marketplace for $250, and I thought I would use that. But now I'm thinking maybe I will use this, because one of the advantages of this box thing is you can remove it and then you've got a truck again. Whereas the way I'm going with this cap is I'm going to permanently turn it into a camper and I won't be able to go haul like a big load of lumber or something. So I'll let you know if I actually do that. That's a spring project. I'm not getting into it, but this thing is pretty cool. Now, the price. If you have ever been out there pricing cappers, you can see that they're easily $3,000, $4,000 for just a silly truck cap. These things are under $3,000. Now, that seems like a lot. You could probably look at this and say, well, I could build that for less than that. And if you can, good for you. I will not be upset if you actually do that. But for me, who's not all that handy with carpentry and doesn't have a big shop to work in, I maybe will drop $3,000 to get a start on this project. I haven't decided yet, but anyway, take a look. I have a link in the show notes from Autopian, who talks about these things. There's a bunch of YouTube videos about them. And wow, I think they're very, very clever. Another thing they did that I would just throw in here is they don't come with mounting brackets. I take that back. They come with mounting brackets, but they're not attached, because that way you can customize how it mounts to your specific vehicle. You know, your D-rings might be in a different place than somebody else's, or maybe you don't want to use the D-rings. Maybe you want to attach it a different way. You can also have it sit above the wheel wells. Like, you can build a platform and put it on top of that, or you can have it sit between the wheel wells if you get the one that's narrower. Anyway, I'm kind of excited about this. I will let you know if I actually go through with it, but that is the Tusca Hitchhiker Camper, suitable for truck, trailer, or just putting on the ground, actually. Product review. Diane, I'm holding in my hands a Dibbums LED rope light. Sorry if you didn't get the Diane reference. If you were old, you would have. But anyway, this is the one of the things I talked about last week in that Black Friday special, and it was one that I was like, okay, I'm buying that for myself. I actually sold it to myself. It was funny. It wasn't until I listened to the podcast after I had produced it that I sold myself on buying these things. And so I did. I actually bought two of them. Now, I have it in my hand. Here it is. Can you hear it? Yeah, it doesn't make much noise. And it is pretty much what I described. It's a big white hockey puck. You know, it's bigger than a hockey puck, but it's the size of a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that's round. Does that make any sense? Maybe a double. It's a little thick. But this is a reel of rope lights that you charge with USB. And I found out it actually has two separate lighting systems in it. There's the rope lights, and then there's a very bright LED that's built into it. So you can use just that LED instead of the rope lights, or you can use just the rope lights, or you can use them both. And you can dim them, you can make them flash, and you can even make the main light flash red. So if you need an emergency, it will actually flash SOS. So you have a red emergency SOS flasher too. And they are, they're really, really long. It's 10 meters of rope light, which is over 33 feet, almost 34 feet. Yeah, for $13, these things are great. And I looked, and they're $13.99 if you get them on Amazon now. There's a link in the show notes. These things look like a really cool lighting solution, and honestly, if you are in a no-build situation where you're in a small vehicle, this could be the only light you needed for $13. Charges USB, and from the reports, I haven't actually had it out in the field yet, but from the reports, it will last for 2 nights before it needs a charge, and of course, that is going to be influenced by how much of the lights you turn on. It feels like it's pretty strong. The reeling mechanism is great. On one side, you've got basically a hook, and then you've got all the lights. And then on the other side, you have the reel. So you could actually wrap the lights around a tree and hook them on there, and then just move the reel wherever you wanted and have a string of lights. And then when you're done, you just unhook it, and you undo this thing here, and then you just reel it up. Can you hear that? Yeah, that's me reeling up the lights. This amazing technology we have where you can hear what I'm doing. Oh, my God. Anyway, it uses USB-C. Thank you. Nobody should use anything other than USB-C. And it has one drawback. It is only 1 amp charging. That means it's going to be fairly slow to charge. But you absolutely could throw this on your car's cigarette lighter charger, and anything you're going to charge your phone with would charge this just fine. And, you know, all day long, you're probably going to have time to charge this. It's not going to be that big of a deal if it dies on you. That's why I got two, though. So in case one dies, I have another one. Anyway, $13.99. I think it's a bargain. I think it's great. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do with it right now, but I'm glad I have it. So there's a link in the show notes if you're looking for a very clever little USB light rope thing. Maybe you didn't even know you needed one, but I think you do. Tales from the Road. I'm actually going to make my Tales from the Road and my place to visit the same thing this time. I'm going to merge the two topics because I went to a place that impacted me quite a bit. So I will tell you the story and then I will give you the details of this place. So it's called Melk Abbey. M-E-L-K Abbey. Now, an abbey is a place where Benedictine monks study and live. It's kind of a community center as well. There's a school there. There's a large church. It's a religious center run by the Benedictine order. And I honestly didn't know much about the Benedictines. I went to a Xaverian high school. I went to a Jesuit college. I knew something of their traditions, but I really didn't know much about the Benedictines. And it turns out that they are comparable to those other groups I mentioned. They're dedicated to education and the reconciliation of faith and reason. In fact, we saw lots of stuff about that on there. This is not my personal belief, mind you, but I understand where they're coming from, and I was thankful that they let me visit. So, this sits above the town of Melk, which is in Lower Austria. So imagine this, you have a river going through the valley, and then you've got big hills, and then on the biggest hill, there is this abbey that was built basically in 1700. It took about 30 years to build it, but it was started in 1700. And it does not look like a castle, but it kind of is a castle. Side note, on our trip, we visited many castles, and it turns out there's no definition for castle. Castle, palace, rich person's house, they all kind of blend together. So anyway, if you ever go to Europe, see if you can figure out what the definition of castle is. But this place was designed to be very, very fancy. It's Baroque architecture, which means a lot of symmetry, a lot of ornamentation. And somehow, this place has survived all the world wars and all the things that happened before the world wars, the Napoleonic Wars, the Protestant Reformation, all this stuff, this place managed to survive. And it's still in use today. It's kind of amazing. And in fact, if you've ever heard, if you've ever seen the movie or read the book, The Name of the Rose, it's mentioned in there because it's that important. So you're going to go visit an abbey. What do you think you're going to see when you're going to visit an abbey? Now, I've visited religious places all over the world because tours tend to take you to them. I visited a monastery in Quito, Ecuador, for example. I visited temples in Vietnam. I mean, I've seen a lot of these buildings. So I was expecting more of the same. You're going to see, you know, lots of statues of saints and, you know, some fancy church stuff. And they do have that, but the other stuff I saw was quite striking to me. So it's a very large complex, and I have to say my largest disappointment is that they will not let you take photographs indoors, and that is a real shame. I'll get to that in a second. So we're walking in there, and it's just this big place, and you know, we can walk around. No one's messing with us. We're outside in this big courtyard. Courtyard is filled with sundials. There's a bunch of them. It's not one sundial. There's a whole bunch of them, and several of us were looking around trying to figure out why there were so many sundials. Is it so that everyone looking out the windows in this square courtyard could see one sundial? Or is it because the sun moves across the sky during the year and certain ones will deactivate and then the other ones will activate? Or can you, like, triangulate between two sundials and come up with a more accurate time? I don't know the answer, and there wasn't anyone there to answer that question for me, so I'm still stuck in the wondering. But one question I did get answered in there was why there was this really strange modern art painting on the wall of this 18th century monastery. Now, this wasn't like a mural or anything like that. This was a fresco. This was a decorative structure, part of the abbey, and it was painted very modern. It turned out there were four of them. The one I was looking at was called Justice, and it was this kind of Picasso-like, not the cubism, the other Picasso, I shouldn't have gone that detailed, but anyway, early Picasso, not the cubism drawing of almost watercolors and chalk, it looked like, of a figure with a sword and a blindfold, and then another figure on the ground, kind of, I don't know whether he just got stabbed or cut or was waiting for judgment, I don't know. But it was totally in stark contrast to all the Baroque stuff in the church. And I thought, wow, that's really weird. Like, why did they do that? I wonder what the story is. And the story is, and this is the theme through most of this place, is that there were 18th century frescoes up there, which looked just like you thought. You know, cherubims in the clouds, a saint or other, something like that. Stuff you've seen all the time. And over time, those wore away. And they started to fade, and the paint started to fall off. And rather than repainting them in the style from the 18th century, they hired someone to paint them. Well, hey, you're an artist. Paint us justice. Paint us faith. paint us reason. And I actually don't know what the others were, but it was something along those lines. And whoever did it said, yeah, okay. And they did, and they painted it as though they were painting it in modern times. Thought, fascinating. Strikingly contrasting to everything else, and not attractive at all. I think the consensus was that these were really jarring and ugly pictures. And someone just chalked that off to, well, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But what I realized at that point is we went, at least as we went inside, I realized that was the theme for this museum slash abbey. The tour guide showed up, who the local one who was in the building with us, wearing this white shawl over her head, and very wondering, like, is she a nun? Is she a sister? Is she part of the religious aspect here? Or is she just a tour guide? We don't know. We never found out. And she has the keys, this big ring of keys. And as she takes us through, she locks and unlocks every door we go through. And we go into this room. And it's a gallery, and it, you know, she explains that these were where this was actually the hotel part of the abbey. In order to keep the rich patrons happy, they had like a hotel in there for the rich royal folks, and they had a nice place to stay. We were in those rooms. There was a really interesting fireplace that was made out of ceramic, but you put the wood in outside so that the people inside just got the heat, and all the mess and stuff was with the servants. That was interesting. But in this galley, in this room, there were exhibits, but none of them had anything to do with the abbey. They were all abstract. One of them was like cubes, and one of them was just colors. And there were single words written on them, like ideas. It's like, this is really weird. It was very postmodern, making you think in ways you didn't think you were thinking. We weren't learning about history here. We were learning about the experience, the Benedictine experience, in a postmodern way. And it blew me away. I don't think anybody else in the group was impacted quite the way I was, and that's fine. I walk to my own drummer, and everybody does. But it was really interesting, because they didn't tell us anything about this. She comes in, has us come in the room, no photographs, please. She was very, very strict about that. And then shows us this room, and we're supposed to mill around a bit. Doesn't really explain too much. And then we go to the next room. Now, as we're passing into the next room, I hear a noise. And it's a word, and I don't... It's a German word. As you go through the door, something has a German word. Like, it just speaks. I don't know where it's coming from. There's no speakers. And I'm watching. I tend to be at the back of the group to make sure that stragglers don't get lost. And I'm watching everyone who goes through. It says, bleh, bleh, bleh. And I'm like, why isn't anyone noticing this? It was really weird. Maybe people thought the noise was being made by somebody in the group. I don't know. But I noticed it. And then finally, after the tour guide was done giving her spiel, I asked her, I was like, what is that noise I keep hearing as people walk through the door? And she said, oh, that's one of the Benedictine principles. As you walk through this door, you are reminded to listen. Apparently, it was the German word for listen. I'm sorry that I don't know what that is. But that was experiential. You either noticed it or you didn't. The tour guide didn't mention it or point it out. And that was kind of what made this whole place postmodern. There were all these experiences you were going through that weren't obvious or plainly stated. And yet, where you were was a very plainly stated place. This was an 18th century monastery. That was obvious. And so I had no idea what to expect as we were going through this. But she then took us to this amazing library filled with 18th and 19th century books, stories high, and there was an amazing ceiling. And anyway, I'm going to stop describing this place there because it is just amazing. Now, there's a link in the show notes, and it's to Melk Abbey's. It's their own site, and there are photographs in there of some of what I've talked about. But if you're ever in Lower Austria, in the Wachau Valley, whether you're on a riverboat tour, or you're on a cycling trip, or you're doing the van life out there, yeah, see if you can get into Melk Abbey. Again, no photos, frustrates the heck out of me. But see if you can do the tour the way I did, in complete observational mode, where the tour guide is just one stream of information, but there are many, many other streams of information, and you can choose to follow whichever one you want. Do you want to see the Benedictine principles presented to you in a postmodern fashion? Do you want to focus on just the architecture? Do you want to focus on the utility of such a building? What must it have been like living here in the 1700s with no electricity, etc., etc., etc.? There are many, many, many different paths to follow. And I really, really liked that. Not a religious guy. I typically do not like visiting religious places. But this was an exception. I loved it. I would go back again with no problem. And if you're the kind of person who absolutely loves cathedrals, if that's like the height of your tourism experience, you will not be disappointed at Melk Abbey at the very last stop. But I'll leave it there. Yeah, Melk Abbey, Benedictine Abbey in Melk, Lower Austria. A surprisingly interesting place to stop, and I'm thrilled that I had that opportunity. Tech Talk. Didn't Tech Talk used to be earlier? Did I forget Tech Talk? Huh, I just realized I forgot Tech Talk. So, hey, Tech Talk. How did that happen? I am not doing stuff in order. Anyway, Tech Talk. Just real quick, because this is getting very long episode here. LED lights. I have spoken quite a bit about how LED lights are one of the great boons of modern van life. They use very little power, they produce very little heat, you can change their colors, you can charge them all different ways, or you can just plug them in. I mean, they're great. I love LED lights. But I'm starting to see this growing movement saying that LED lights are dangerous. I actually saw somebody asking for safer, natural alternatives to LED lights, and they were referring to incandescent lights. And that really bugged me, because we have produced this amazing thing that's so much better in so many ways, and people are trying to undo it, and I don't think they're trying to undo it based on good information. You have probably heard about blue light and how it's bad for you. Blue light, oh my God, it's the worst thing ever. You have to go buy special glasses just to play video games because there's blue light. It's not really like that for a whole bunch of reasons. First off, there are a whole bunch of doctors and medical professionals who are saying that, no, this is crazy. Don't worry about blue light. It's not that bad. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. First off, the largest producer of blue light in the world isn't in the world. It's in the solar system. It is the sun. You go out in the sun, you are completely bathed in blue light. And then you might say, well, Jeff, it's not that light. It's not the daytime light. It's looking at blue light at night that's bad. Which is true, except that it's also true that looking at any light is bad, including incandescent lights. Artificial light is not part of our evolution yet. We're not used to it as a species, and it can mess up our circadian rhythms. And if you're having trouble sleeping at night, yeah, you maybe don't want to have the smartphone in your face while you're trying to go to sleep. You maybe want to start turning down the lights earlier, etc., etc., etc. But LEDs are not the culprit here. It's just light, and you can deal with that anyway. If you don't like the colors of LEDs, you can change them. You can make them warmer or lighter. And let's remember how unsafe incandescent lights were. They could cause short circuits. Yes, you could possibly do that with LED too. They got hot. They burned things. They started fires. They broke suddenly. They broke much more often. They used a lot more power. LED lights are better in every single way. I have a link in the show notes that explains why you shouldn't be afraid of LED lights and why they're completely safe, and also why all artificial light can cause problems with sleeplessness and circadian rhythms and all that kind of stuff. But again, it's a light problem. It's not an LED light problem. Don't eat LED lights. Yes, there may be toxic chemicals in there. And believe it or not, LED lights are not the same as they were when they first came out about 10 years ago. They actually produce less blue light now based on people being concerned about it. I am in the camp, as are certain doctors I've talked to, that the blue light thing is just not something you need to pay attention to. It's not a real phenomenon. We seem to get excited about these things. Here's the latest thing that's going to kill us. Oh my God. Yeah, I don't believe it. I'm sorry. I know I could see all kinds of TikTok and YouTube videos from people wearing stethoscopes saying this stuff will kill you, but looking at stuff I respect more studies and such, I don't think it's a big deal. But heck, if you want to avoid blue light, that's fine. I just think you'd be crazy not to embrace LED technology, because it is safer and better in every way. Resource recommendation. Okay, real quick. I love Amazon. I'm not thrilled with all their practices, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I know it's a problematic company, but typically if I'm going to buy something, I'm going to buy it from Amazon because they have the best service, the best selection. I live in Chicago. I can get stuff in 2 hours usually. And the best price. Asterisk, and this is the resource here. It used to be that Amazon almost always had the best price, but now with Amazon Marketplace, and let's understand, there's Amazon and Amazon Marketplace, and they look the same. If you search for something, they're going to show up together, but Amazon Marketplace is people selling their goods through Amazon. A lot of people have figured out that they can buy products from companies that don't sell on Amazon, mark them way up, and then sell them on Amazon, because there's a lot of people, kind of like me, who never look anywhere but Amazon. And one of those examples is IKEA products. You know those big blue bags they sell at IKEA? They're very popular in van life, and I highly recommend you get a bunch. They're great for laundry or groceries or whatever. You can even fill them up with water and use them as a tub if you need to. They are 99 cents if you go to IKEA. 99 cents, that's right. On Amazon, they're $8 plus shipping. And oh, you get two though. You get two for $8. So they're four times more expensive. And why is that? And it's just what I said. It's a marketplace seller who has realized that people are lazy and they're just going to search on Amazon. So my advice to you is keep using Amazon if you want. I'm going to keep using it. But remember that for some of these things, if they're not sold directly from Amazon, you can probably go direct to the source rather than the marketplace and get it for a better price. Now, can you get IKEA to ship those to where you want them in the amount of time you want them? That's a whole other story. But just know that Amazon does not, by any means, always have the lowest price. And I think at one point it pretty much did. But not anymore. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening. Next week, I'm going to try to do an interview with my friend Hal, and we're going to talk about some of the stuff he's done in his rig, which I think will be informative in many ways. We'll see if I can make that happen. But until then, music, as always, is by Simon Wagg, and you can get a hold of me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's two T's, not three, not one, and we're on Discord and Facebook. Links are at builttogo.com. And until next time, remember the words of E.E. Cummings, who said, "Once we believe in ourselves, we can risk curiosity, wonder, spontaneous delight, or any experience that reveals the human spirit." Talk about Van Fest a little bit. February 6th through